Welcome, everybody. Happy Tuesday afternoon to each and every one of you. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We start with breaking news. Just this past hour, the Supreme Court has paved the way for the Trump administration to move forward with plans to slash the federal workforce and dismantle numerous federal agencies. The decision could result in tens of thousands of job losses across agencies, including the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of State, Treasury, the Veterans Administration, and the list goes on. This interim order, which lifted a lower court's ruling that had blocked the mass layoffs, was unsigned and did not include a vote count, which is typical in these emergency shadow docket matters. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote a public and frankly steaming dissent, as she is now known to do. At least there's one voice of reason on the court these days. Of course, I will dive more deeply into her dissent and this news tomorrow, because we have quite a packed show for you today. I'm going to get to some other additional breaking news, but let me tell you what we've got in store for you this afternoon here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Tuesday, so I'm thrilled, as I always am, to be joined by my good friend and yours, Angela Lang, the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. Welcome back, Angela. Happy belated July 4th to you.
Yeah, happy belated July 4th. It's my first real day back in the office. We had a little bit of a break 4th of July week, so it feels like a Monday to me. I'm moving slow.
Well, and I heard you did some work for Civic Media yesterday as well. We're always so very happy to have you. Also this afternoon, Angela and I will be talking with Stephanie Bloomingdale. She is the Wisconsin president of the AFL-CIO. We're going to talk about the big, brutal bill's impacts on labor. And when I say labor, I don't just mean organized labor. And Stephanie and Angela are going to help us understand why, even if you have never been in a union, the way that the brutal bill attacks working people and labor will be important to you. That conversation coming up at 4:30. At the 5 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Lindsay Owens. She is a consumer advocate expert. Well, what does that mean? She is the executive director of the Economic Think Tank Groundwork Collaborative. So when you've heard all this talk about the big brutal bill and you're like, well, what does that actually mean for my pocketbook? Well, Lindsay's going to help us unpack all that at 5. And at 5:30, Jeff Mandel joins us from Law Forward, because a highly technical but crucially important Wisconsin Supreme Court decision came down today. This is not one that I'm going to suggest you read, because it is about presentment and all kinds of very technical separation of powers issues, but it has one crucially important impact in our state. Jeff is going to help us all understand this. So you're going to want to stay with us throughout the whole entire show. I might even get to the clinic that the Milwaukee Brewers put on yesterday at AmFam Field against the Dodgers. I love to see it. Stayed up for all of that game. And y'all know that I love me some baseball, and we do need some levity these days. So all that coming up for you. But Angela, you and I have not had the opportunity to be together on this program in a hot minute, and a whole heck of a lot has gone down. We're going to get to each and every bit of that, yes. But I wanted to get, there was a little bit of news. We all knew this was happening, but the returning superintendent for the Department of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underle, was sworn in officially today for her next term. Again, she won re-election back in April. That ended up being a little bit more of a contested race than many expected, usually a bit of a sleeper. And I just, you know, we've got the state's biennial budget, and there have been a lot of criticisms from folks on the left, both of Governor Evers specifically, but also of other legislative Democrats, specifically some of the leaders like Senator LaTanya Johnson, who was on this program right after the budget deal was announced, criticizing those leaders, as well as Senator Dianne Hesselbein, who was on our show yesterday. basically saying, listen, you didn't get any increase in general school aides. You didn't get the Medicaid expansion. You didn't get postpartum Medicaid expansion. This wasn't good enough. And Angela, given Dr. Underley's swearing in today, I thought I wanted to start with that bit of news to get your take on the biennial budget, because I constantly struggle with Democrats who take a my way or the highway. It's got to be perfect and we got to get everything approached or it's trash. And then I'm going to trash other Dems who realize that, hey, we don't control the state legislature, so we're not going to get everything on our punch list. What was your reaction to the critical improvements in the University of Wisconsin systems, special ed reimbursement rate, absolutely critical, and of course, the big one, the big kahuna, hundreds of millions of dollars in funding that wasn't there before for childcare in the state. What do you think? Good budget? Harm reduction or harm avoiding budget? The best we can do? Or screw you, Governor Evers. What say you, Angela Lang?
Depending on the day,
fair.
There was definitely a screw you, Governor Evers, last week. Not gonna lie, I made some anchor phone calls to the office. And you know, I agree with, you know, I know Dan Schaefer has a piece out, and I agree that I do think that this budget could have been a lot better than what we had. I will start by saying I'm not naive to the fact that we are living in Robin Voss's Republican controlled legislature.
Yes.
So, you know, I think folks, there's a way that you can be critical, but also have like a very grounded understanding, like analysis of the landscape that we're in, and still be critical to know that we could have gotten more. I've talked to a lot of teachers and a lot of educators who are not happy. You know, special ed funding, great that there's an increase, but folks have asked for like a 90%, you know, rate. And
right, so that we can get the same replacement rate that voucher schools do.
Exactly. And so it's still not even getting to that point.
Here's my question. Do you think those things were possible? Because I was around when the negotiations were going down with Dems and Republicans, and specifically Voss, Lemieux, and others, when it came to the sales tax, which has its pros and cons, and we know them. Sales taxes are regressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I heard Voss say, if XYZ gets brought up again, these negotiations are over.
Yeah.
Right? And that is a known tactic that Speaker Voss has used for years, and he means it. He has walked away from negotiating tables. So do you think those things were possible? What could have been done to bring them into? Because the thing with negotiations, right, is there is the zone of potential agreement and no one knows exactly what that is.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, understanding it's Robin Voss, right? And you have to go in very clear-eyed and understanding that that is the role in the dynamic. I also feel that a lot of folks didn't feel that the governor really fought for his own budget. You know, my own state senator, Senator Larson, had some pretty scathing remarks about, you know, not seeing, you know, in 15 years, not seeing someone, you know, defend their governor or their own budget, you know, the way that Tony didn't this cycle. So there's been a lot of scathing remarks. And so I do think that we could have gotten more. Would we have gotten all the things that progressives wanted? Absolutely not. And I don't think that we're naive to think so. But one thing that I think we could have gotten that actually made its way to the bill that the governor decided to take out was the closing of Lincoln or of the Green Bay prison.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest, it's my biggest criticism, because it made its way into the budget. And then the governor did a line item veto to veto the deadline of 2029. And that was something that we could have actually gotten. It made its way to the final. But the governor, after saying in our own office in 2018, saying, I want to reduce the prison population by half, now is not even having a deadline and even applying pressure to even close this institution. So that was something that I do think that the governor could have done. And that had nothing to do with Robin Voss. There's Democrats and Republicans on both sides that said that they, especially in the area, want to get this closed. It is a bipartisan effort. And it was the governor himself and his team or whoever, not Robin Voss, that did that line item veto at 1:30 in the morning.
Do you understand what the logic behind that was? Did he just think it can't be done by 29? He doesn't even know if he's going to run for a third term. I don't get it strategically.
So what I don't either, but I will tell you what the governor's office called me, because we tweeted at them and then immediately I got a phone call back. Their logic when I asked them was that they didn't think that the Republicans' plan was sufficient and was even realistic to be able to close by 2029. And I respectfully pushed back of like, well, now you have no plan at all. You thought the Republicans didn't have a plan. You have even less of a plan now of the deadline. But it's my understanding that that $15 million that was allocated is still there. I'm waiting to get answers back of what that is going to be used for, especially now that there's no pressure and there's no, it doesn't seem like there's a real will to close the Green Bay prison. And just for folks that don't know, the Green Bay prison has had a long list of, I would just say flat out human rights violations. It is terrible. If you just Google the Green Bay prison, you will see lots of reports that come out, especially in the last year or so. And the governor said, you know, he's committed to closing it, but he's not really doing anything, especially line item vetoing that that deadline, especially when it made its way through Robin Voss's process. And I'm going to call it his process. It made its way to, you know, his desk, and the governor himself vetoed it.
We could spend, and maybe we should do this, Angela, and I know my senior producer, Jamie, is listening. Angela and I, would you be interested in having a long discussion with me about institutionalization and the prison problem? Because
absolutely,
it has become an industry that is extraordinarily self-perpetuating. It defends itself. It's extremely sticky. The idea that a sitting Democratic governor who's pledged to reduce the prison population, in other words, release from custody those who have low likelihood of recidivism, who are nonviolent offenders, these are largely drug offenses, and get people treatment and into different pathways other than the incarceration cycle. I think that would be an incredibly important conversation because, you know, the third rail in politics is nobody runs soft on crime, but that is such a stupid idea because that's not what it is about. It's about how do you legitimately create safer communities, and understanding that the threat of prison in many, many circumstances is zero deterrence for what the sort of crime that we see that is disruptive in our communities. Folks, we're going to return with Angela. We're going to touch upon what is potentially a looming transit strike in the city of Milwaukee and the potential cascading consequences across our state. Even if you think it might not matter to you, let me assure you it does. Angela and I discuss more when we return right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.